roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Happy holidays again. Hope you all had a Merry Christmas. And, of course, the New Year's coming up. Stay safe out there. Good times here as we end this horrible 2020, but there's still two more Junkie Radio shows to do. That's right. Today is Monday, December 28th, and we'll also be with you on the 31st. Right, Goz? What did we say about that one?
I guess technically we haven't really looked into it too much, but I have to imagine if the people that help out with the show are willing to do it on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Okay. I couldn't remember if I think we left that out there. I think actually we were trying to do the favor for the team that puts the show together behind the scenes, but they were still working, and so are we. And let's face it, who's going anywhere, right?
Yeah.
All right, we got a fun show ahead of you. So we'll recap the World MMA Awards. They got presented on the 26th, so that was Saturday night. Ton of news from over the weekend as well. We'll go over that. No show to recap. The UFC's final show was December 19th, the Stephen Thompson, Jeff Neal fight night card. And then they don't come back personally until I think it's Cater and when they go to Fight Island, basically. So it's like the 16th or something like that of January. So they got a couple weeks off the UFC. Well deserved. And that's Cater and Holloway. And then that's followed by McGregor and Poirier. So same thing with Bellator off. Only one show that I can think of is Ryzen. And there's a few Japanese stars that still are doing their thing. I think I saw Gomi's name and the grappling kid. Oh boy, what's his name? Aoki, that's right. He's on there as well. I'm recognizing less and less, so maybe that's a good thing. Maybe Japan is grooming some new stars. All right, folks, buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, December 28th.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
All right, so, Goz, you want to start with awards or end with awards?
End with awards.
All right, so let's blast through some news. We'll start off on a good note. Charles Oliveira down in Brazil, his home country, after enjoying a big, big win to close out the year, he was donating some food. Man, I'm telling you, when I see these fighters get involved in stuff like that, whether it's a charity like Dustin Poirier, you know, or he donates his kids to help build playgrounds and or just raise money, I think it's tremendous. But it doesn't mean that, you know, some people have it in them to do something like that. Those are bigger projects. Building a playground? Come on. But even on a day when families are having a rough go of it and they're starving and you can donate turkeys, or meals, or just be there to assist the places, the outfits that do. That's awesome. And I saw that Charles Oliveira was doing that in Brazil, so I wanted to give him a shout out. He just beat Tony Ferguson, of course. Imagine the holiday he had. This took place in Praina Garauha, and I guess and look, I mean, the whole world's gotten hit hard by the pandemic, but I guess, you know, how some towns get hot goes, right? You know, where like they get just besieged, and I guess they're in the midst of that.
Yeah, I would recommend to anybody, if you ever get the chance to leave the United States and just travel a little bit, you'll really have an appreciation for some of these stories and what they all mean. So on paper, you look at what he did and you say, okay, you know, I've seen Floyd Mayweather give turkeys on Thanksgiving. That kind of happens a lot. And I'm not saying it doesn't mean a lot to people here in the States, but I'll tell you what, man, if you see some of the conditions that people live in and just the little amount of hope that they're born with, it's pretty sad. So to see an area like that, for him to do that, they don't have that many heroes. There aren't a lot of people that come out of these situations and make something of themselves. So for him to do something like that, it means the world to these kids, to these families. It's such a cool thing. I mean, I know George and I grew up in Orange County, California, Santa Ana, California. And anytime there's a good football player or somebody that comes out of there, it puts an extra smile on my face. And this is, you know, the area we grew up in looks nothing like the area that he grew up in. But it's such a cool story to read and such a cool thing for a sport where most people consider, you know, boxers or MMA guys to just be mean and stone-hearted. It's a cool thing to see.
Yeah. And guess what? I've actually been to two favelas in my life. And they are very, very, what can I say? They're very dense. That's probably the best word I can use. And so there's a lot of people basically living within close proximity. For one, a lot of big families live, you know, in one small building, hopefully separated by some rooms, you know, a bathroom, a kitchen, and maybe a bedroom or two or something. But other times it's just, you know, one big room. I don't want to say it's the jail cell or anything like that, but, you know, there's not the washer and dryer room and the garage or nothing like that. So now picture between you and the next place is you may share a wall, and that might be on all four corners. And look, I mean, there's favelas that even have like some of their nicer areas, but even then, in and around, it's its own town. It's its own town on a hill. So no matter how nice you may have it, because there are some drug dealers that have some nice places up there. But, you know, there's obviously people that help run these towns. They have, you know, their city councils and mayors and stuff. They're big, proper cities, but still doesn't stop from the fact that the other 90% are all packed in close quarters. I can only imagine once COVID hits a favela hard, what it must be like, because they also don't have the best hospitals there. And so then they have to leave the mountain to go to other places. And every problem we have here, they have there. Funeral homes, hospitals, you know, and this is aside from like your normal flus and poverty, and just there's probably been food crisis 365 days a year for some people, you know what I mean? But yeah, COVID, if it shuts down, the one guy that maybe the leader of the household that's out there trying to provide, and he just can't get out for a month, imagine what that does. So that was huge what Charles Oliveira did.
If you're curious about what we're talking about, a good movie to watch is City of God. It's in Portuguese, so you got to read subtitles. But I'm not a huge subtitle guy, but I'll tell you this, it was worth it. It's a good watch, and it's basically concentrated in these areas. So if anything we just said piqued your curiosity, go watch that movie. I think you'll like it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Aside from the fact that it'll hit home with what we're describing, and a lot of MMA fighters have said they've grown up in favelas. So this is in Sao Paulo. That's their major city. That's their New York City. It's like the second most populated city in the world. Not their capital. Their capital is Brasilia, a more modern city up north. I shouldn't say that. It is modern, but Sao Paulo's got it's a really, really nice metropolis. Like I say, it's like New York. So, but it's massive. And then Jose Aldo's from Rio de Janeiro, second biggest city. I'd compare that to LA. It's a coastal city. And really, really relaxed and chill. But yeah, I think a lot of the times when you see, like, Michael Jackson did a video in a favela called Rocinha in Rio de Janeiro. I went to that one, and I believe Jose Aldo grew up in one of those. It may have even been that one. So yeah, that's a great movie. That's a great reference that goes mentioned, and it's a good movie. So you'll like it on many fronts. All right, moving on. Some fights that got booked. Let's go through that. It's an article that consistent, whatever you want to call it, that Nolan King has done for our website. And so on January 16th, we already know that we get Cater versus Holloway. They just added Phil Haas versus Nasruddin Imanov. Then we got Joaquin Buckley, who's up for KO of the year. He's got Alessio De Chirico. And then on January 20th in Abu Dhabi, Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny. Now, again, all these got booked here in the last week or so. Some you may know, some not, maybe you don't. Sometimes some of these slip through the cracks. Dean Barry gets Mike Jackson. Mike Jackson's the photographer slash journalist who fought CM Punk. Good friend of the show. He's been to our studio. But he hasn't fought in a while, man. So I thought by now they just would have said, okay, you did your duty, you know, beat it. Or here's another fight, right? And I think we had gotten past the whole, well, they're not telling him to beat it, so he's going to get his other fight. When is it? Well, here it is. It's coming up. We also got on the 23rd, this is the pay-per-view, UFC 257. Those first two were a Saturday and a Wednesday. They come back with this pay-per-view, and it's Andre Muniz versus Mahmoud Muradov. Muniz is out. Muradov steps in to fight Andrew Sanchez. There's a fight night on February 6th, and I guess if I'm not telling you it's in Abu Dhabi, they probably wind up being here in Vegas. Devontae Smith versus Alex Da Silva. Shout out to James Lynch for breaking that one. Let me see. TASS for the Sanchez-Muradov update. MMA Fighting came in with Dean Barry and Mike Jackson. ESPN with Chiesa and Magny. MMA DNA, Haas and Imanov. Shiriko and Buckley, yours truly, MMA Junkie on that one. So let's see here. Continuing on the 27th, Randy Brown versus Alex Oliveira. Combate did that one. Hannah Seifers versus Emily Whitmire, MMA Fighting. Then we get to March 6th. Now we're at UFC 259. Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson for the women's featherweight title. There's a fight night on March 13th. Oh, who broke that one? ESPN. Fight night on March 13th, Matthew Semelsberger versus Jason Witt. And that's it. Some good ones in there, right, guys?
Yeah, good ones. Chiesa fight's the one that stands out to me. Chiesa Magny.
And Nunes and Anderson are going to finally get down. They were supposed to fight in December. I think they were supposed to be one of the original headliners of UFC 256. Which wound up being Figueiredo versus Marino on 3 weeks' notice because Burns and Usman couldn't go, and then Sterling and Jan couldn't go, and Nunes and Anderson couldn't go. I don't remember if it was supposed to be a triple title fight billing, but I know all of those at some point were involved in there.
Yeah, that's a fight where I'm interested to see what the line is going to end up being. You have such a dominant fighter like Amanda Nunes. I have to imagine this is going to be somewhere in the at least minus 500, right? But probably ends up in like 700 range.
That's not a bad guess. I mean, Megan's, you know, she's not going to get outsized. Like, usually Amanda's just ragdolling people, but she's doing it with her fist, and she's doing it with her technique. But she just has the superhuman strength, you know? But I think with Anderson, that part might get nullified. There you go. Yeah, I was like, neglected, that don't sound right. And but yeah, that's basically what I meant, was canceled out. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think it's just Amanda's got that proven KO power, and she loves to throw those hands, and then she's great at Brazilian jiu-jitsu, great at judo, a black belt in judo, brown belt, or maybe even black now in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And just confident as can be, fast, everything. You know, she'll take you down if she needs to. She really has filled up a lot of the holes she used to have. I mean, people even used to say she gets tired, which she did, but she can go five. So what do you do with a fighter that's almost unbeatable? Yeah, I would say 700 is probably even better than 500. I don't know if 1,000 is too much, but we saw Valentina at 5,000 or at 1,000. Over 1,000, you know, so I don't know. I don't know. I don't worry too much about it because I've never really dove into the actual breakdown of the odds, I guess. I just wait for them to come out and either agree or disagree. But I love playing underdogs in MMA that I don't think I could ever do something like that. I think the last time goes where I said, minus 500, you mean I got to walk up and put 500 to win 100 or 5,000 to win 1,000 and sweat that out? The last time I actually said that to myself and then answered myself by going, yeah, it's easy money, was Floyd and Connor.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
A lot of money came in on Connor, so it helped bring it down. But how was a guy that's never boxed before professionally going to beat an undefeated fighter, one of the top 10 to ever do it? You know what I mean? How's that going to happen?
It's like Usain Bolt, right? As dominant as Usain Bolt is, and then all of a sudden you just went, hey, this guy over here, Odell Beckham, he's pretty fast, and he plays another sport where they run. Why don't we match them up? Like, that's how ridiculous it looked to a fight fan that actually understands how games work or how fights play out and everything that goes into the training. Dude, I mean, anybody that we were all salivating, right, when that all came out. As far as gambling goes,
yeah, we were, because that should have been, it should have started at 2,000, maybe even 5,000. I don't know, just somewhere enough that it scares away the guy that says 2,000 to win 100. Yeah, I'll make an easy 100. I mean, actually, someone that's got 2,000 probably doesn't need to make 100. But let's say the guy that's got 20,000 laying around, and he knows that 1,000 will get him and his friends a cabana all weekend. And he just thinks that'd be funny, you know, for at the pool. So you go, yeah, I'll just grab 20. That way they can pay for the whole cabana, and then I'll put the 20 back. That guy, I could see doing it. He wouldn't even bat an eye, you know. Now, if you tell him, hey, bro, it's actually instead of 20,000 to make 1,000, it's 50,000 to make 1,000. So now 5,000 to one, or maybe even 10,000 to one. Now you're thinking, okay, wait a minute, 50 grand to make 1,000. Yeah, no, I think I'm good, you know, because what if just there's some sort of a disqualification? What if they're building fight number two? You know, you put your tinfoil hat on and all of a sudden you're thinking of ways in which the weirdest thing could ever happen. But dude, I just knew Floyd. There's no way that guy wanted to retire undefeated so bad. He would never take a fight that would even jeopardize that, you know. That's why I don't even think he would take Manny part two. I know he beat him the first time, but Manny's still fighting and Floyd's older and slowing down, but I think he realizes that one could be tough, you know, for sure. You don't want to get back in there with Canelo. So I think he's just going to pick off this easy money like Jake Paul or Logan Paul or McGregor, Habib, whatever.
Think about if you put money on Conor McGregor that day, think about what you're saying. You're saying that guys like Canelo Alvarez, Manny Pacquiao, have been boxing since they were first walking on this planet. They couldn't get it done. And you're saying, yeah, but I think this guy can do it. Like, how ridiculous is that?
It was ridiculous. That's why it was easy money to scoop up. You know, but with Amanda, oh, man. I just think of Megan. I mean, what is she, like 5'11", 6'1", something like that?
Pretty big, yeah.
One, I think. I think Amanda's almost 5'11", or 5'10", or 5'9". But what if she just runs into a knee or something, you know? I don't know. Everyone has their day in MMA. Shout out to Habib and John Jones. They haven't had that yet. There's a few other undefeated fighters, but I'm talking about the ones that have been champs and defended a bit. That's quite the accomplishment. Habib does not need to go 30-0, folks. 29-0 is just fine. However, if he wants to be regarded as the GOAT, then yeah, he'll need to come back and defend a few times. But he's already an icon, bro. He's a legend. He's on Mount Rushmore, you know. But is he the GOAT? Well, that's a whole other show, a whole other 1 hour show. Mm-hmm. All right, continuing on here. We have the, you said you wanted to do the World MMA Awards at the end. What time is Jared Gordon, by the way? Forgot to mention
9:40.
That. 9:40. Okay. Kavanaugh, John Kavanaugh, he did an interview and he says, I think it was right away. He got me thinking. He says, I think you can spend a lifetime going to sports psychologists and talking to this person and that person, and that's not going to have been erased from his mind. He knows he's facing somebody who can shut his lights off very, very rapidly and is now a lot more powerful, a lot more experienced than he was even then. So it's a tough uphill battle for Dustin. I would expect the coach to say that. And he's actually pretty brilliant at choosing his words and playing a little bit of that game in the media. He's not lying in any way. I think any fighter that goes into a fight, having fought somebody and lost and even finished, that definitely has to weigh on you a little bit. Can also motivate you. Both guys definitely have improved since then. This is actually in a new weight class for both. Well, since their other encounter at 145. Dustin's more experienced at 155, but Conor's been a champion at 155. So is Dustin. Dustin got an interim belt. Conor got the undisputed belt. But I can think of a lot of cases, goes, where somebody lost the first one and then came back and won. You know, I don't think John was trying to fool us into thinking that it's never happened. Right away I came up with Miocic lost to DC and then came back and beat him twice. Bisping got thumped by Hendo and then came back and beat him. ESP got blasted by Sarah and then came back and put a whooping on him. He got submitted by Hughes and then beat him twice. Who are you saying?
His very own guy, Conor McGregor, lost to Nate Diaz in the first fight, solved the riddle, came back in the second fight and won. I mean, it's very possible. The sports psychologist angle is like, I think a lot of people probably picture Dustin Poirier on a couch and a psychologist giving him reasons why he can win the fight. That's probably not why he's there. It's more of just clearing his mind and things going into the fight, the walk. And not necessarily directed at a Conor McGregor fight, just in general. You know, what is it that you're thinking of? What's going through your head? What are your emotions? Why do you feel that way? I don't think it's generalized towards Conor McGregor. It's just life in general and the fight game in general. So I don't know that that's going to play too much of a factor. Now, one thing Kavanaugh said that I think is true is you're not going to erase that from someone's memory. Of course, it's always going to be back there, but people grow. And like you said, Dustin Poirier now has more weapons. There's more confidence. If I went into a fight with a bat the first time, but I came back with an AK-47 the second time, of course, I'm going to have a little bit more confidence, right? Well, Dustin probably had a bat the first time. Now he's got an AK. Like, he's a lot better fighter. Problem is, so is Conor McGregor.
Yeah. I thought of a couple other ones, too. Cejudo got finished by DJ in the first fight. I think it was started off with a knee to the solar plexus, but then Cejudo came back and won the second. Eddie Alvarez got beat by Chandler. He got choked in the fourth round and then came back and beat him and got his title back. So, you know, I think I picked a variety of divisions, people coming back from submissions, KOs. But one thing that all these guys had in common, all great fighters. I'm not saying Dustin isn't great because, like I said, he's become an interim champ. So he's very, very capable of doing it. But, yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen. But I like that, man. You know, it reminds me a little bit of Phil Jackson, the coach of the Bulls and the Lakers during their runs. He played a little bit of that mind game as well, whether it was trying to talk about the refs so he could get calls, or maybe another team star player that hadn't won a big game or whatever, just to take the pressure. I think he used to do it a lot to take the pressure off his guys, honestly. And I think Jose Mourinho's got a little bit of that in him as well, where you focus so much on Mourinho, it just allowed the guys to play. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. It was an interesting interview. I can't wait for the fight. And there's so much involved in the fight. Will it be for the undisputed title? That's what Kavanaugh says. What are we doing here, you know? And it's true, but Khabib and Dana, I don't think, are going to talk until that week goes in Abu Dhabi. That's kind of a long time. I mean, I think both guys are probably preparing for it to be a title fight anyway. But I just don't know why this couldn't be solved, I guess, earlier. Maybe Dana feels like if Khabib steps ground in Abu Dhabi and sees Conor, it'll just get the juices flowing for maybe him wanting to fight him if Conor wins. Right. I don't know that he'll come back for Poirier. I don't mean that as a slap to Poirier. I think Conor's just someone that really, really irks him and he has hatred towards. I think he loves Dustin Poirier. He's probably a fan of Dustin Poirier.
Mm-hmm. Can I set up the next topic?
Yeah.
I want to do a little bit of a crossover. If you guys see in my background, I got this luchador mask that was given to me by one of our listeners, Joe from Odessa, Texas. He's called in before, so you guys are probably familiar with him. But the reason he gave it to me was, and he gave one to George, is that's kind of our logo on our other show, the Triple G Show. Gorgeous George and Ghost Show featuring Richard Hunter. It's on Patreon. Check it out. I want to give a touch of gloves. And it'll be a little early touch of gloves. But I want to give one to Mike Bond. And let me tell you why. Mike Bond did a really interesting interview with Scott Coker. And Scott is usually one of those reserve guys that kind of, he'll give you a lot of answers, but before you know it, nothing's really been solved, right?
So like, and he starts a lot of his answers off with, you know, I'll tell you, or well, I'll tell you, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll tell you. So you're hanging on. You're like, oh man, what's he going to tell me? But no, he doesn't tell you much. And that's kind of been his thing. And it's not like surprising. I think if you told Scott that, he'd probably go, yeah, I mean, I do it for a reason, right? But in this particular interview, he talked about a lot of things, man, and he opened up a little bit more than he usually does. And there was a lot of cool, interesting Bellator things that came out. And one was, you know, Pitbull possibly giving up his 155 title to give his brother the option of maybe fighting for a title. I thought that was interesting. You know, they did the whole Askren and Paul thing. And for Scott to kind of take a side on that and say Askren probably get KO'd, I thought that was different for Coker. I thought that was good. And then talking about Yoel Romero and why he did end up changing his mind on him, and he gave that explanation. And
can you tell me that? I saw that title, but I haven't read that article. Why he wound up giving Romero a second look?
Yeah, he was just saying that, you know, once he did it, he noticed that so many people came out and said, like, that would be a sick fight if you could put that together. And he said, you know, we talked to the managers.
What fight?
Anthony Johnson and Yoel Romero. And so he says, you know, we talked to the managers almost every day about other fighters. And he goes, it just kept getting brought up. And he goes, I had him at Strikeforce. So he said, you know what, let's just do it. And I thought that was interesting because you don't really get that too much from Dana White, where he's very very hard stance. You know, if he picks a stance, that's it. He's riding it to the end. And so to see a guy kind of say, hey, at first I thought no, but then I changed my mind, you don't get that too much. And then lastly, what was the last one? Fedor Emelianenko and his last fight and his thoughts on the last fight. I don't know. Mike must have been like a pig in slop or something, dude. He was getting all kinds of good stuff out of Coker. And so I wanted to give him a touch of gloves. So this, the touch of gloves is a segment we do on our Triple G show. It's the reverse stun gun. If you guys remember our stun gun episodes where we're usually coming at someone for being dumb or whatever. This is one where we actually give praise to someone. And so I want to give Mike Bond a touch of gloves.
He's a great journalist, man. You know, I felt bad that him or John didn't win Journalist of the Year. Ariel Helwani's now won it 10 straight years. And this isn't to say Ariel isn't a great reporter, because he is. But I think he's kind of transitioned more into what our managing editor was saying. He probably should be with Personality now, you know? And then he gave a great example of, you wouldn't make Stephen A. Smith up for Journalist of the Year. You know what I mean? He actually has a proper show, and they give a lot of opinions and they talk about the big news. He's more of a personality. And I think that's what he's established with Chael and DC and the stuff that he does. So I would maybe move him to that category. I'm sure the journalists aren't telling me to say this or nothing like that. This is just my opinion. But I see the work that these guys do, not just those two that I named, but I see what our staff does. And I'm sure these other websites also have their versions of Bonds and Morgans that are hustling and doing stuff, you know, like Damon Martin over at MMA Fighting, for example. But, you know, I just wanted to give them a shout out. I think they do a great job. So kudos to both of those cats. And yeah, Mike Bond, you did a great job with that Scott Coker interview, because he is a little bit of a sphinx, a puzzle, a riddle. And it seems like we've gotten some good traffic and some good info from his latest interview.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my things on my list here was Pitbull Frady. So Pitbull Frady, that's Patricio Pitbull Frady. He's the featherweight champ and lightweight champ. His older brother's the lightweight contender. That's Patricky. He still has a semifinal versus Emmanuel Sanchez. I looked, and there's no fight booked as of yet. There's no date set. The winner gets AJ McKee. That side of the bracket got done. So if there's nothing booked yet, let's just say I'm going to go with best case scenario, March 1st. I don't even know if that's a Saturday, a Thursday, or what it is, but I'm going to say March 1st. It's done. All right, cool. Well, best case scenario is 3 months later. So what's that? April, May, June 1st. All right, he fights, if he wins over Sanchez, he fights McKee. And then after that, you know, he wins both fights and he's unscathed, right? No broken knuckles or nothing. So by the time he gets to lightweight, and trust me, we'd all be saying, hey, man, you just did great. Two fights and half of a year, take a break, you know. But now you're looking at June 1st, so July, August, September 1st, before you can even get to a lightweight contender, which, by the way, we really don't have. It really is his brother's one of the top guys, because Benson lost that fight to Chandler, you know. He's the other name that I know there. And then they got a few others. Primus, I'm sure, you know, Derek Anderson, I don't know if he's done with 155. Or McKee talks about going up. I don't know. I don't know what they might do, but they don't have a stacked 55-pound division. So why not let it grow right now, make it vacant, shake Patricky's hand and go, you're the man. You know, you beat Chandler, probably their greatest lightweight ever. If not, it's Alvarez or whatever. But you beat this guy and focus on featherweight this year. Yeah, it allows the brother to have a chance. And if not, then maybe you can go back and regain it. That's what Chandler did. Chandler regained that title three times. Eddie Alvarez, he regained that title as well. So he will not have lost it. He just will have vacated. But I think that's the way to go. And then segueing into Bader, he talked about with Mike Bond that he wants Bader to fight, or that Bader's talking about, I want a rematch against Nemkov. Well, that wasn't really a close fight, was it?
No, not really.
Why do we need to see a rematch? I mean, he hadn't defended that one in a while because he was doing the heavyweight Grand Prix. So I just don't see the need. Phil Davis, since he lost the Nemkov, went 3-0. He earned his shot. Now, if we're going to do a Grand Prix, we can figure out who's going to fight who, because you got AJ, Yoel, and all the others. And I'd love for Bader to be a part of that. But now, Bader, do something about the heavyweight division. You know, you won the title there against Fedor Emelianenko, and that was January of 2019. You guys tried one fight with Chikongo that was declared a no contest. Congo has since lost. I don't know if Timothy Johnson's a viable candidate or Minnikov or who, but get that going, you know, and get that sorted out. That's supposed to be your version of the baddest man on the planet. And if it can somehow line up where your version of the baddest man on the planet has beaten the UFC person, the UFC guy at the time or whatever, then you can boast about having the baddest man on the planet in, you know, the whole world, which is something that Scott Coker, I think, had at one time with Fedor Emelianenko, of course, until he had his first fight and lost to Fabricio Werdum. But when he grabbed him, that's who he got. That's who he brought into his organization after the Pride and Affliction run. So that's something the UFC could never really say they had until Emelianenko started losing his fights. And ever since then, I think the UFC's been able to boast that, but
John Morgan won me over a little bit on one of your guys' topics for spinning back click.
Mm-hmm.
We asked whether or not the Grand Prix for Bellator would make sense, right? And John had an argument where he said, look, if we throw all these cats into there, especially with two newcomers like Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson, you're pretty much saying one of these guys is going to lose right off the bat, which has kind of been the problem with some of these Bellator guys that have come over and not really performed right away. And everybody wants to see Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson. That would be a big fight for Bellator. So you could either make them fight in the first round, or you could take the chance that they meet up in the final, which is probably what you would want, best case scenario. But I started thinking about it. Maybe it's not the right move to do that Grand Prix, unless you do make that the first fight. And at that point, I think both those guys are looking at you like, bitch, all right, you know. But
Grand Prix just never seem to work out when you picture them that way. Mm-hmm. You know, Fedor didn't even get out of the first round, I don't believe. Right? He lost to Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yoel's a little older now, and let's get these divisions rocking and rolling. I had come up with one, and I put it on Twitter. I'm going to see if I can recreate it. But I believe it was Romero and Johnson. I mean, Johnson lost interest in the sport and said, I'm Ghost. And now he's back. But that guy could be Ghost again. I don't know, you know. So while it's hot, Romero versus Johnson. Let's do it. Another thing is, I got a couple things to say here. How many times did you look at MVP versus and you go, oh, because you don't know who that guy is or whatever. And you're like, all right, we get it. He's fucking good. Throw him in there against somebody. Same thing with AJ McKee. He's awesome. You got us. Let's see a good fight. You know, let's see him get tested. And now, finally, those fights are coming. And even then, even MVP versus Paul Daly, that one they let it marinate for a while and it didn't deliver. Derek Lewis versus Ngannou, we kept talking about that one. And so it's not guaranteed that it will. So to let it marinate too long, and then if it's a dud, kind of sucks. So I'm just like, man, strike while the iron's hot. That's one fight. Nemkov versus Davis, just because Davis is a senior member of the Bellator Light Heavyweight Division. So let's get that going. I think he deserves it. And then that leaves Mousasi and Bader. You put them together, and I'll tell you why. Because the loser goes back to defending his division. You know, oh, Bader, you lost? Okay, well, go back and defend heavyweight. Mousasi, you lost? Oh, go back and defend middleweight. Now, if you win, well, you deserve to. You know, you deserve to continue going because as Mousasi's fighting bigger men, and that's what he wanted to do, and so he wins, he should continue, and he doesn't have to pay attention to middleweight right now. And Bader, he's cutting weight to make 205, although he's really a natural 205er. So I like that one. And then that left out Corey Anderson versus McGarry. Corey Anderson's probably going, whoa, 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 whoa. I kind of got screwed in the UFC for a while. I thought, you know, that wasn't going to work over here. But he lost to Blachowicz. You know, he did lose to Blachowicz. That's what made him not be a title contender. And he came over and did get a win, but beating Melvin Manhoff doesn't get you a title shot. It just gets you introduced to the light heavyweight division and to the organization or whatever. But I think you give him someone like a Liam McGarry who's recognizable. He's a former champ. He's beaten some good guys along the way. I don't know if he's on a win streak or losing streak or whatever, but you give him that guy. And then I wouldn't even bracket them. I would wait to see who my four are and then figure it out from there, you know. I got to imagine that I think if Corey wins, you know what? It might be like impress. Whoever impresses gets Nemkov next because Nemkov is going to defend his title along the way. But that's kind of what I would do, man. I think Davis deserves to get the next shot, not Bader. Bader, he's just had two belts for too long. He wasn't defending one or the other, and then he loses in a fight that wasn't really that close. I don't know, man.
I feel you. No,
I'm not trying to disrespect him because all I'm saying is just go defend heavy. You know, like you're the man over there.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Okay. Next, Belfort wants Jake Paul. I guess if that's the way to draw him into one championship, sure. You know, maybe they want to do something like that. And I think Belfort would be, you know, any MMA guy I think is going to teach him a lesson, except for Ben Askren. I think I agree with Scott Coker there. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Of all the options, if I'm Jake Paul, I don't want that one for sure. I mean, Vitor's hands are too quick, too good, too much power, too much speed. I'd stay away from that one. That's Askren all day, right? Like, don't, like, if he has a manager, whoever, somebody sits him down, so they go, we got this guy here and this guy here. What are we thinking? Like, I don't feel like you're going to make that much more by fighting Vitor Belfort. Plus, Ben Askren's probably going to do a hell of a job promoting that fight. I think he'd actually make more money fighting Ben Askren. So I would probably do that.
Yeah, I don't know who's got Ben Askren's rights. I mean, when he retired, maybe them and him and the UFC are free and clear or what. But and I don't think he's going to do it under Bellator now, because I don't think him and Coker are best friends now. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Cub Swanson, man, we are grieving with you. His manager, Kami, passed away. I read that, goes, it broke my heart. And then I read about Cub's tribute to him. He, you know, not only was his manager, he said he called him his best friend. He baptized his kid, one of his kids. He was actually his best man at his wedding. They were together for almost 20 years. We've known Cub for 15, because we got to know him even before we started Tag Radio. Tag Radio on April 11, 2021 will be 14 years old, but we met Cub before that. So it's been about 15 years, and Kami's always been at his side. And one thing I found out in his tribute was that Kami was a doctor. I didn't know that. Such a cool guy, such a quiet guy. And that's why Cub looked up to him. The guy was an accomplished professional, you know, and he advised them on many different fronts. Kami Safdari was his name. May he rest in peace. He was a great guy. And Cub Swanson, man, our deepest condolences. And I know we got Jared Gordon coming up, it goes, but do you want to say something to the Cub and, you know, to the family of Kami Safdari?
I mean, that guy was just so cool. He was so nice. And I feel so stupid right now, because I have one of his old original grappler shirts, and I wanted to wear it today, and I completely forgot. So I think I'll wear that one on Thursday. But guy was just super nice, man. Just always a really good guy and a really level-headed thinker.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to get to our guest now. It is Jared Gordon. Jared is going to be fighting Danny Chavez at a fight night coming up in 2021. It's not till February 20th, but it's always a good time to catch up with Jared Gordon.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're now joined by Jared Gordon, who's going to be fighting Danny Chavez. I may have misspoke. This might be a featherweight. Jared, first of all, I hope you had a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. I hope you are safe and sane, because these are some tough times. It's been a tough year. And, of course, congratulations off your latest win, too. So I know I said a lot, but how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Holidays were slow, you know, COVID and restrictions and traveling. But still had a good time. Ate well. About my last couple huge meals, you know, until I fight. But everything's been good. I live in Florida, so the restrictions here are a lot lighter than the rest of the country. So it hasn't been that bad for us, luckily.
Your next fight's at featherweight, right?
Correct, yeah. I went back down to featherweight for my last fight, and I'll continue to be a featherweight. I truly believe that that's the weight class that I should have been at this whole time.
Yeah, I kept forgetting. I mean, obviously, I congratulated you on the win, because I know Fish Gold was the win. And for some reason, I thought Oliveira, what was it? So you go to both different weight classes, but right now you're focused on 45. So let's talk about that win over Fish Gold. It looked like you carried a lot of emotion going into that fight. And like I said, it has been a tough year. And then also I want to congratulate you on 5 years of sobriety. To see what you had listed there on your social media was incredible when you break it down the way you did. 5 years, a certain amount of days and everything. And you could tell that's just a never ending battle that you'll always have for the rest of your life. But guess what? You've been undefeated in the last 5 years. Shout out to you.
Thank you. Going into the Fish Gold fight, we were like in the middle of the pandemic. I think it was the first time UFC had gone to Fight Island. So, I wasn't sure what to expect. My fiance had contracted COVID like 2 weeks before the fight. So I was quarantined alone. A lot of people in my gym were getting COVID. My coaches and teammates, Gilbert Burns tested positive. He wasn't able to fight. And my coaches all tested positive. So I went there with no coaches, no teammates, and I was alone, and I wasn't going to the gym for like 3 or 4 weeks before the fight because I was afraid to get COVID. So I was doing all my workouts on my own. It was crazy. I'm training 2-3 times a day by myself. There's only so much you can do. So I felt rusty. I felt off my timing. I wasn't sparring. I wasn't rolling. So I went to Fight Island just quote unquote raw dogging it, but I just believe that, I'm the better fighter and I got the W and I was able to dig deep and, it was kind of boring. I almost had him out of there in the third round, but the ref didn't stop it. I just felt like I had like no pop on my shots, no punch on my punches, and standing, I felt like I was in the mud. I guess because I wasn't doing pad work, I wasn't sparring, everything was just off. And I was also really, really sick 2 weeks before the fight, before I left. I got super sick for like a week. I had a terrible fever, but I got tested 3 times that week and I kept testing negative for COVID. And then I went to Vegas, I tested negative. So I don't know if I had it or not, but it was, it was a messed up camp. And, I just came off the loss to Oliveira, so I just had to get the W, and I did. And that was the third fight on my contract. I was awarded a new contract. I got a pretty decent raise. So I'm going into this fight full camp. Hopefully everything works out the way it's supposed to, and go get my W.
Yeah, the way they broke it down when the UFC did the documentary from Fight Island was something else, man. Is it, if I'm not mistaken, is this when Eric Nixick became a part of your camp as well? And
correct, Felder
take off the tie, right?
Friend of mine, so he cornered me. Eric Nixick and Gary Tonin, who fights for ONE FC, Henzo Gracie black belt, or Danaher black belt, or whatever you want to call it. And I trained with him for years up in New York. So he was there cornering someone else, and I was like, hey, you want to corner me too? And he was like, yeah, sure. So it was a great corner, actually. It was kind of an all-star corner. I had Gary Tonin, one of the best grapplers on the planet. I had Felder, who, is just a close friend of mine. We've trained for years together, so he knows who I am and what my game is. And Eric, I've known Eric for a while, and it just worked. It was just cohesive, and everyone got along, and the cornering was easy. I could hear them. They cornered me really well, and it worked out, and it made for a great story,
Well, let me tell you something, man. That had to be a horrible mind fuck. Everything going on with the coaches, everything going on with the negative tests, being on an island with others, but you're all together in a bubble, but you're also secluded in your room for a certain amount of hours. So, the win, man. The win was epic. It was important. It was cool to see your better half. When I'm watching the documentary, it escapes my name. It was called Fight Island, Unclassified. There you go. Yeah, seeing her emotions. It was all really, really interesting. It really
was. My better half. What do you mean?
Yeah, that's what I was supposed
to say. She's definitely my better half.
Yeah, no.
It was crazy, man.
You deserved that.
No, go ahead.
No, you deserved that win. You went through a lot. You're being hard on yourself. You're like, well, it was kind of boring at the end or whatever. Yeah. No, man. All those fights were special. Every fight this year has been special because of the circumstances. And then Declassified allowed us to see behind the curtain just everything somebody, you know, like yourself went through. So the win is the win.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, you know, when I got to Vegas, I tested negative. Then they send me to Abu Dhabi, and we got tested at like 3:30 in the morning. I passed out, and I wake up to a phone call from a Houston, Texas number. And I'm like, at first I thought it was spam, but I answered it. And there was an Australian sounding guy in the other line. And he was like, hey mate, it's me, Mick Maynard. And I was like, hey, what's up, Mick? You know, I never talked to Mick cause he's not my matchmaker. So I have no reason to talk to him unless I see him at a fight. So he was like, oh, I got some bad news. You tested positive. So I was like, what? I've been testing negative for the weeks leading up to this. Turned out it was a false positive, but you know, then I start, you know, making the connection on the plane over there. Me, Bisping, Sarah, one of the flight attendants, and Dana, we all took a picture together, arm in arm. So if I had tested positive, that means that I was in contact with the president, one of the commentators, Sarah. We're on the plane. Everyone that's on the plane that's around me has now come in quote unquote contact with me. So for 12 hours, I was like freaking out when I was over there. They had to retest me, but I had to wait, you know, 12 hours to the next day for my result. Came back negative. Then they tested me again. That came back negative. So it was a false positive. But for 12 hours, I'm thinking, wow, I ruined Fight Island. I take down the whole company, you know? So it was pretty nerve-wracking. And with everything else that was already going on, my fiance, like I said, got COVID, but she also had a miscarriage 3 days before she contracted COVID. So the whole everything leading up to Fight Island and then getting there was just insane. No coaches. So yeah, the W meant a lot. And I was able to get it done and move on to the next one.
I'm glad you were able to get that release, man, because everything you were talking about, I couldn't imagine just one of those stressors having one. You had like three or four going on all at the same time. Yeah. It was pretty nuts. I want to ask you a little bit about your position right now and where you're at in your career. Could you say, as far as weight goes, as far as training camps go, are you pretty close to finding what is, I guess maybe people will say, is the right recipe? Or does that recipe constantly change? How do you feel about that right now at this moment?
Man, so that's exactly what I've been feeling and thinking is that, you know, when I first got into UFC, I blew through the first two fights. I looked great, you know. My first fight was at 45. I missed weight, so they made me move up to 55. But then I fought Hakran Diaz, my second UFC fight, and he was a 45er his whole career. So really, I just fought another 45er at 55, and you know, I blew through him. And then I fought Diego Ferreira, and that didn't go my way at 55. And then I fought Joaquin Silva. We got fight of the night. It was a great fight. I tore my hamstring off my pelvis. I wound up losing that fight. But as I'm getting in the cage, I'm looking at these guys across the cage. I'm like, geez, these guys are huge, you know? And, you know, like my frame, I'm just not a 55er. I don't have height. I don't have the length. I have a 69-inch reach. That's like a 35er or 25er. And I'm just smaller than these guys, like, size-wise. So, you know, I was at Rufus Sport for the Joaquin Silva. I fought Dan Moret, who was also huge, 6'1", way longer than me, humongous. You know, I beat him just because I was better. And then I fought Oliveira. I took that kind of like on a whim. He couldn't get a fight lined up, and I lost my opponent and they were like, would you fight Oliveira? And I was like, yeah, whatever. I'll take the shot at it just because, you know, if I win, that propels me. You know, if I lose, it's like, yeah, well, you lost to Oliveira. Didn't go my way. Then you got to look at a guy like Oliveira. Super tall, long as hell. You know, he's great everywhere. Look at him. He's destroying the competition. So I think the Oliveira fight had to happen for me to finally say, all right, I got to go back to 45. I'm just too small for the weight class. So I made the jump back down. Then I also moved my camp to Sanford MMA, which is way more my style. Duke, I learned a lot from Duke. I love him at Rufus Sport. But, you know, it's a striking gym. And I'm a ground and pound guy. I'm a grappler. I got to wrestle. I got to roll. Yeah, I have knockouts, but, you know, that's not my game. I'm not going to be running off the cage and kicking people in the head like Anthony Pettis, you know. And it's just I have to be who I am. You know, I can't try to be something that I'm not in this game. It's just when the guys are really big and they're really good, it's just so hard to win. Where do I find the advantage? So now that I'm back at 45, the weight class that I should be in, I'm at Sanford. I'm wrestling like almost every day we wrestle. I'm rolling. I think also the striking is more my style for my kind of frame and just how I started my career off anyways. So I'm in the right place. I just got a new contract. I'm coming off a win. I got a nice raise. I'm back at 45. And, you know, now is my time to – I really feel like I'm going to hit a stride here. And, you know, I think I'm flying under the radar too. My game is underrated. I have a skill set that most people do not possess. You know, you see it all the time where guys, oh, he had 20-something takedowns. It's like, that's impressive, but to me that just tells me that you don't know how to hold people down and hurt them on the floor. You take them down and they get up. You take them down and they get up. So it's like when I take people down, they normally don't get up, and I'm beating you up on the floor. And I have in UFC history for ground strikes, I'm top five in UFC history. I think I'm in front of GSP. And I'm behind Kamaru, I'm behind Khabib and Tatiana Suarez. So I put up numbers. You know, I take you down and you're gonna have a hard time there. And like now you just gotta stop it. So it's like Khabib. Everyone knows what Khabib is gonna do. He's gonna take you down, he's gonna smash you on the floor. And that's what I do. And you know, I just gotta find my way to the inside, take you down, and once I take you down, I'm gonna have, you know, I have a really good chance of hurting you there. So I think I'm flying under the radar. I think a lot of my attributes are underrated. And, you know, I think if you look at me on paper, it's like, well, this guy's like, you know, I'm 4-3. I fought two guys. I lost to two guys that are ranked top 10, Ferreira and Oliveira. My other loss is in a fight of the night that I was winning every round on every judge's scorecard, and my pelvis, my hamstring ripped off my pelvis. So I was on one leg in the third round. So yeah, I lost the fight. I couldn't move. I started getting hit. The ref stopped it. So like, if you know what you're talking about and you look at my record on paper, you're like, well, this guy's fought some monsters. So I was fighting out of my weight class. So, like, I think I'm flying under the radar, and I know that I'm going to hit a huge stride right now and go on a tear.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because earlier in the show, George had referenced in April we're going to be going on our 14th year of our show. Okay, so we do this a lot, but there's so many of you guys that it's so hard to keep track of what exactly this guy looked like in his last fight and all that. And I was curious, when they threw the name Danny Chavez at you, are you that ingrained in these divisions that you know right away every name that gets thrown your way, or were you kind of like, who's this guy, and you got to go in and dive in a little bit? What is that like for you?
Well, I remember hearing the name before. I did have to look at film, and then I'm like, okay, I know who he is because I remember watching his fight. I normally watch every card, so I remember he's a tough guy, and he's explosive, and he's got knockouts, and you know, he's a stand-up guy, and he throws that calf kick and he throws head kicks, and you know, he's got some good wins. But I think stylistically it matches me well and it works in my favor. You know, he's like, I think I'm a little bigger than him, and I know that I fought tougher competition than he has, and I think my skill set, you know, matches up really well with him, and I'll be able to exploit where he's weaker, you know, and his four losses are two submissions and two decisions. So I'm assuming, you know, that when I first saw his record, that he probably got out-grappled or something like that. So I think in the transitions and certain little nuances, I'll be able to exploit those things. And, you know, everyone has a chance. You got 4-ounce gloves on and you kick and knee people in the head, you know, you're going to hurt them. So, but I think I'm figuring out how I have to go into a fight and how, you know, I don't have to rush things, you know, take my time, see my openings and figure out the puzzle, you know?
You ever bet on fights, Jared?
Yeah, I've bet on a couple of fights, but recently I've like trying not to gamble. It's just not for me. It's like, you know, being sober and, you know, I'm supposed to practice certain principles in all of my affairs of life. So people think being sober means, okay, you just don't drink and get high. No, like being sober is doing everything like without sin, basically. Like, I'm not going to cheat on my girl. I'm not going to womanize girls. I'm not going to be, you know, like, you know, catcall peep girls or, you know, fight people on the street, be an asshole to people. You know, not like if I see someone that needs help, go help them, not just, you know. I think that what shows true character in someone is if you're having a bad day, but you still go out of your way to help someone else. So that's what I try to do. When I see someone on the corner and they're begging for change, I give them money. I know what that's like to be on the corner and ask people for money. I've done that before. You know, so gambling, like, and I've lost money gambling before. I've been in the casino. I love blackjack. I love poker, slot machines. I've bet on sports. I've bet on fights. I've won before. And I've also fucking lost before. Excuse my language. So it's like, I'm trying to stay away from that. But
I understand. I asked because when you were talking about those stats about holding people down or whatever, I know a lot of people that bet that would love hearing that, you know, about where you stand with GSP and Kamaru. You know, that's when you can cement and win those rounds, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Because I'm around a lot of people that bet and I'm around a lot of people that live bet. And what we want to see is if you secured the first round and you had an easy time of getting somebody down, holding them down. We don't mind if you lose round two, especially if you've already taken their best shot. You know that they can't do anything to you because we know that you're just saving it for the third. And in the third, you'll get the takedown, try and finish. But if not, we know we got a 2-1, you know, judges score, boom, cha-ching, yeah. You know what I mean? But I'm a guy that has vices as well, and I know what it's like when they all kind of come together, when they, you know, they blend over one to the other. That's why I was wondering if, you said that, and you said another thing. You go, man, I don't miss any fights. I was like, this guy, he's watching the prelims. I wonder if he's betting. That's why I asked. I'm a fellow gambler.
Yeah,
I gamble a lot. You don't.
I had a bookie AG account, you know, and I would win. I would make crazy bets, parlays, and it was just like, you know, I'm like, all right, it's just not worth it for me at this point in my life. You know, and then I lose $500, $1,000. I could have bought anything else that I needed or wanted that I probably held off on buying, but I'm willing to just gamble it away. It's like, to me, I do stuff like that, and you know, this is something that has like recently happened to me. My girl was in North Carolina and she was coming back from the trip, and I picked her up in at Fort Lauderdale Airport, and right next to the airport is the Hard Rock Casino. She's like, you want to go up to the Hard Rock? I'm like, all right. So this was like a couple months ago. I pull out $1,000. I hit the blackjack table. I get murdered. I play every card right. You know, I don't I'm hitting on 16. I'm staying on 12 when they have a 4, and I'm getting raped. They're hitting every car. Boom, $1,000, 10 minutes. And I'm like, what the – I could have paid my car payment. I could have done 2 car payments with that. I could have paid part of my rent. You know what I mean? And I'm like, why did I just do that? And then I also spent $200 on food with my girl. I went to the airport to pick my girl up. I spent $1,200. You know what I mean? So it's like
– you had to put her up running a limo for her. And that would have – man. You broke it down.
I went home and I was like, fuck.
You should have just done a limo with roses, and that would have cost you $150 to $200, and you just stay at home, and you would have saved $1,000 on that day.
Yeah, and I probably would have, you know, maybe got some action.
you don't know how many times I hear guys, you know, my buddies yelling at their wives or their girlfriends, you spent how much at the store? You know, Costco or something, $200. And I'm sitting there telling them, shut the fuck up. You've got 800 on the Rams. You know what I mean? Like,
all right. Well, man, let me tell you something, too. I had a friend who was a pro MMA fighter. And not last week, but the week before, he committed suicide.
What?
He was, like, one of my best friends. And
sorry to hear that.
He had a you know, I don't know for sure, but I'm like pretty sure he was a degenerate gambler. Serious degenerate gambler. And, you know, I know that was part of his depression, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've seen guys who are sober, who were rich, like, I knew one guy, he had $2 million liquid cash. He was a degenerate gambler. And he gambled every dollar away. And then he gambled his house away. And then he drank himself to death. He was sober for 20 years. He went back to drinking, drank himself literally to death because of his character defects. Like, couldn't stop gambling. He couldn't stop chasing that high, you know? And for me, like someone like me, like I used to shoot cocaine and heroin, and I used to do crazy shit to get money. And I used to I would rob a drug dealer. I would rob someone. I would pull a scheme. I would do this. I would sell a drug. And like, it's all for me. I'm like an action guy. Like I need to do something where I'm like, you know, having action. So gambling, I used to gamble like crazy. I used to, so like in sobriety, if I like I'm sober, but I'll just gamble. So it's just another high, you know?
Did and you see that Adam Sandler movie?
What's that?
Did you see that Adam Sandler movie? Ghost, do you know what I'm talking about? Where Adam Sandler.
Uncut Gems.
What is it? Yeah. That one.
Or something like
that. Yeah.
My favorite movie. Two of my friends were in that movie.
Wow. Yeah, it's basically in New York.
That's the Diamond District, you know, where it took place in Manhattan and whatever. But that's what I'm saying. You get yourself wrapped up, and then all of a sudden now you got the mob looking for you because you owe the bookie money, and you borrowed money from a loan shark. So you paid the bookie off, but now you own the loan shark 50 G's. You can't pay the loan shark. Now you're asking your friends and family to spy you the money, but no one wants to help you out because everyone knows you're a degenerate gambler, and then you kill yourself. So, I'm willing to do that. I'm done with that shit. I played that game way too much. And, yeah, I'm not like, you know, I'm 32, but I did that, you know. Oh, shit. Let me borrow 20 G's from the loan shark. Now I'm paying a VIG every week. I can't keep up with the VIG. You know what I mean? I'm paying whatever, $100 per 1,000 or whatever it is a week, or per 5,000. Your VIG is 500 a week. How the hell do you keep up with that? $500 a week VIG. You're paying 2 G's a month, just in interest, no principal. Get the fuck, Ben. I did that for too long in New York. You know, that's like the hustle out there. Everyone's a loan shark, or they own all my friends own poker rooms. They get raided by the cops. Now they're in jail. They come out. They borrow money. They owe. It's retarded. So I'm done with that.
I'm glad you're down in Florida and you're successful. Pro MMA fighter coming off a big win. You got Chavez. I said Chavez. I've always said Chavez ever since I saw Young Guns and 20 years ago. Yeah, so we're looking forward to that fight at featherweight, which is where you seem very, very comfortable. You had a tough weight cut on declassified. Either that or maybe Felder was making it out to be worse than it was.
I mean,
you got
it. It was going to be tough, but I made weight preset, and it wasn't – I didn't have to, like – I've done a lot of worse cuts before, but so I'm comfortable. I know I'm more experienced. I know how to the whole process. When I was younger, I would, you know, cut weight like an idiot. Now, you know, I have a nutritionist. I have someone helping me cut weight normally that they couldn't come for Flat Island, but I've done a million weight cuts with Felder. I helped him. He's helped me. So we know each other and I feel comfortable at featherweight, man. And I know that's, I mean, look at these guys at lightweight. They're monsters. Huge. They're all walking around 200 pounds. I walk around. If I'm 180, I'm fat. You know? These guys
from
are walking
180,
around.
I'm 180. From 180, I'm back in eighth grade. Anyways, listen, thanks so much for your time. It's been a great chat. I think the last time we chatted with you was when you, Paul, and Duke came over with the Mandalay Bay. When things are back normal and you guys find yourself in Vegas, stop on by again. But in the meantime, stay safe. Have a great camp. Can't wait to see you against Chavez on February 20th. All right. Take care.
Appreciate it. All right. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye. All right. There you have it, folks. Jared Gordon. Man, that was an interesting chat, Goes. We covered a lot there, didn't we?
It kind of opened my eyes to certain things, man. Some of the crossover talking. He's right.
I'd love to have like some coffee with him or something and maybe hear about some of these stories. Because Uncut Gems was like, I gamble, but I don't think I do anything that like I'm ever jeopardizing my life the way the character that Adam Sandler portrayed. He was derailing, you know what I mean? Like that's a whole other level of an addiction, you know what I mean? And so I'm glad that I'm not there, but it sounds like what Jared's admitting to is that he can just go and play a few hands, but he can also go on a 3-day binge of just whatever, and he's afraid of them. So he'd rather not even participate in the 2-3 hands or the parlay or whatever. I was going to circle around somehow into either a what-if question or just joke, because he's good friends with Bilal Muhammad, and I was going to ask him, hey, what would you do if you woke up and Bilal circled the other guy's name? But we got sidetracked, and then he mentioned his buddy committed suicide. I was like, oh, man, okay, you know, let's just listen for now, you know.
I was thinking, as he was telling the story about his girlfriend, he said, I want to go to the Hard Rock. I think if that happened to you and I, we would never blame the other guy, but the other guy knows that when you get back in the car, you're probably going to hear, you want to go to the Hard Rock? Which is basically saying, thanks a lot, asshole, right? But got to kind of take it.
That's you know how many times I've been with my buddies at a happy hour or something. How does my mic sound? Do I sound okay? All right, you sound terrible, so we're going to end after this. But we've been like at a happy hour or something, and Squid is really good at putting things in perspective. Like, let's say back in the day, if he lost $2,000, you know, he'd say, man, I would have rather bought everyone in this room a shot, you know, and start over and have my $2,000 back. Because it's true, you know, what's a bunch of shots going to cost you? Maybe $300-$400. You make $1,600. That's why when he was saying that, I was laughing. I was like, yeah, that was $1,000 pickup ride from the airport. He should have just sent a limo for her with roses and champagne. It would have cost him $300. He'd still be up $900 on the whole trip. But anyway, I think he's got a good sense of humor, and I don't think he mind opening up. All right, folks, listen, we got to get on out of here. There's more stuff we can cover on Thursday's show. We'll be here, we promise. Thank you so much for your support. 2020 is almost over. So prepare yourselves for 2021. We're going to make up for it. It's going to be an awesome year, not just because 2020 lowered the bar, but I think we're all ready to take that. You know, we took that step backward. I think we're ready to take 3, 4, 5 steps forward and just appreciate life and appreciate each other. So, like I said, hang in there, everybody. We are out of here, and keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. Keep an eye on the MMA Junkie Awards that are going to come out themselves. We'll go over the World MMA Awards on Thursday. Unfortunately, MMA Junkie as a site didn't take down Best Media Source. Kind of sucks because the team worked hard. But again, we'll address all that on Thursday. Go out there and be a champion.